Our mission at Careering into Motherhood is to help mums have the careers they want. We believe the fastest way to do this is to provide free access to coaches and coaching expertise, which we do via our website. With around 11,000 mothers on our online community, I'm trying to ensure the support we offer is relevant to the diverse community that we serve. I don't always get it right, and I am learning all the time from the conversations that I have. When I met Nikki Collins, I was quite literally moved to tears by her story. Nikki went through most of her life not knowing why the world didn't quite make sense to her. It wasn't until her son's autism diagnosis that she realised she too is autistic. Nikki is one of the bravest and most positive women I have ever met, and I've learnt so much from her in just a short space of time. I hope you will too. Nikki, thank you. I am really grateful to you for coming on this podcast because for someone outside the world of autism, I think it must be, you know, you are hugely brave to do what you do and to talk so openly about what it's like living with autism, but also being an autistic mother. You were relatively late in life when your autism was diagnosed, I think, weren't you?
Yeah, I was 34, so it took quite a while to realise that little Tetris piece in my life.
And how did you cope before that diagnosis? But I suppose what was the path that brought you to finally managing to get a diagnosis? Did you always think this might be the case, or was it a gradual process of elimination?
No, I had absolutely no idea. And I was literally networking one day, it was quite regular for me, before the lockdowns hit. And I bumped into a neurodevelopment specialist whilst networking. As you do, they're all over the place. I'm sure you've met loads.
Oh, loads.
Neurodevelopment specialists. And she was just amazing. And I wanted to really know more about what she was doing. And I went out for a coffee and she taught me some of the stuff that she'd put together in a program of her own. Her son was diagnosed young with dyslexia. Medical professionals told her to write him off and that he would never amount to anything. And being a mum who cares, she didn't take that as a viable option. And she did her own research and she met a lady who'd had a similar experience to her, and she'd put this program together and she taught her everything that she had learned before promptly dying. So she essentially gave her legacy, and she taught parts of that to me. And it was through working with her that I realised that my son was autistic. A couple of months after that, the penny dropped that, ooh, I don't take after him, he takes after me. And that's sort of when I realised, and I went on this quite a downward spiral when I kind of figured that out. How could you go for so long not knowing something so fundamental about yourself?
Really? So you took it very personally, did you, that you hadn't figured it out by yourself?
Yeah, I'd always felt different throughout my life, and I didn't really know why. But how do you know what those differences are when the way in which you see the world is right for you? So things like being able to hear the electric in the cables, I thought that was normal, but it's not. It's not a cool thing to be able to do, to be able to tell when water is running cold or hot because it makes a different sound. And getting really angry when things go outside of your control, it's like, oh my God, I'm completely mad, so I can't control myself, other people can, what's wrong with me? And that's the sort of internal dialogue that holds people back, including myself. So upon that realization, it's when I had this mental shift, and it's like, I've got all of this background in personal development. How can I use it to fuel me forward now that I know what my neurology is? And that was a game changer.
That's amazing. Do you think you had, in those 34 years, had you just developed your own sort of coping mechanisms for the outside world?
Yeah, absolutely. I was masking, and I just didn't really know what masking was.
What is masking? I don't know what masking is.
So masking is basically being a chameleon and blending into the environment to suit that environment. So you're hiding parts of yourself so that you don't stick out, you don't appear to be different, you don't draw attention to yourself, and you're just blending in like the chameleon does. It changes colour depending on what surface it's on. So it's very much like that.
It must be exhausting.
it is exhausting. Yeah, so it's taking those masks off and like really paying attention to when you're masking. So when are you changing the way that you're delivering a message? Why are you changing the way in which you deliver that message? Then you can start to unpack it and work out, because I mean, other people mask as well, because sometimes it's easier to say something to get yourself out of the situation rather than going the long route because you've been there before.
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone masks to a degree, but I guess what exactly. You're talking about is when you realize that you are doing it the majority of the time.
Yeah, it's almost like everybody else was given a rule book of how to be human and I wasn't, and it was okay, so these masks for the majority of people or non-autistic people, they're not even necessary.
It must be so hard. And I want to come back to how you sort of how you went through things. So with you and your son, I mean, I know parents who've had various diagnoses for their children, and that is hard enough to then have to, as you say, almost having a whole operating system that you have to learn to be able to communicate with and give your child the best opportunities and what have you. But when you would, but being handed a same rule book or a slightly different rule book for yourself at the same time, God, my mind, I just cannot, I mean, I'm so full of admiration without sounding patronizing, but I can't imagine how you go about coping with that. How did you cope?
Well, it's almost like having Apple and Android users going over to Apple for the very first time. It's really, okay, how do I do this? Oh my God, this stuff isn't in the right place. So, and vice versa. So it's just, as I said, I've been really fortunate because I've got such a long history of personal development. That's my special interest. So that really has helped me, because so many people don't even know that there's such a thing as personal development. So to have had almost 10 years worth of experience when I went into that, I was like, okay, right. And then I had the ability to self-reflect, take a step back and learn. And because I've got so many people around me in a professional capacity too, I learn a lot from others, because I'm just a sponge. So I guess autistic people have special interests. And for me, my special interests are personal development, autism and neurodiversity in general. Money mindset as well is a big one for the last couple of years, which is useful.
Yes, because I think I'm right in saying you basically wound up homeless and no job.
Yeah.
How does that
happen?
Well,
I mean, it goes back even further than that. I mean, I didn't have the best sort of relationship with my mother growing up. It was okay, but there was a lot of toxicity there as well. So without going into great details, because quite frankly, it's irrelevant really, but I moved out on my 16th birthday and I never finished school. Then I almost got a class A drug addiction. I was using alcohol and drugs to basically block out the harshness of the world, because I didn't have the social skills that filled me with confidence. So alcohol was something that filled me with that false confidence and sense of bravado.
Another type of masking.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. Self-medication is so common amongst autistic individuals. It really is, yeah. And then, where did we go from there? Then I had my son, got work. I actually found work in a bank and worked my way up to management level. No commonality there, Jane. Banking, corporate world. And then my dad ended up taking his life. So there was just so much. But all of these things have given me an experience and they've given me a lesson. When I ended up homeless in 2015, it was just something else it was a hurdle to jump and get around. And it was just one of them things. It wasn't fantastic whilst I was in it, but it gave me the house where I am now, which is fantastic. And I was 20 grand in debt. And then within 14 months of actively taking the conscious choice to take control of my debts, I was then debt-free within 14 months. And then I turned over my first five-figure month.
And what I find incredible is that for one person to have had so many challenges and hurdles, and yet you're here today, as you know, so positive, and now even giving your life to helping others avoid winding up in the same sorts of situations. Did you always have a kind of self-belief, or what drives you, Nikki?
I just I'm of the mindset that these things, they've happened for a reason, and I just have a passion of helping other people. And if I don't share these things, then what was the point? It was just to make me miserable. So life isn't about making people miserable or putting people down. That's mindset. It really is. Yeah, I know that people have been dealt a far worse hand than myself, and people have had it easier too. But it's what we take out of these experiences, and it's how we use them to drive ourselves forward. And if we can drive other people forward with us and take other people and lift them up, then I'm down for that all day long.
You're so positive. I mean, for you to sit there talking with so much positivity, I just think it's massively inspirational. But you got yourself back on your feet. Your son is now doing really well, but I think you homeschool him, is that right?
Yeah.
We've all had our experience of homeschooling. And what was it that you thought, actually, this is where I can provide a better life for him here?
Yeah, he went up to secondary school in his first year, so year 7, and he was so deeply unhappy. He'd been deeply depressed during his younger years as well, like primary school, because I still see him as young, although he's obviously an adult because he's 15 and knows everything.
And I've got a 7-year-old like that as well.
Yeah, 7 going on 21. And he was just so deeply unhappy, and I had so many challenges with him, and no one would help me. Nobody would help me. The school nurse told me he was just a hot-headed boy, and I was like, he's not just a hot-headed boy. These are deeply concerning behaviours, and the emotions that he's expressing are concerning. Why am I the only person to see this? And of course, the answer was, you must go on a parenting course because it's my fault. But he got into year 7 and he just wasn't happy, and I took the decision to pull him out. And he'd be finishing school this year. He'd be in year 11 now. And he went back into the school system for a little while, then we had COVID. Then he went back, and within less than a week, I think he'd been back 2 days of the new school year, he said to me, I can't do this, Mum. And I said, right, I'd already agreed. I thought, yes, in my head, I'll pull him out. I said, right, I want you to write me a note, a letter, telling me why you would like to be home educated, and school sucks is not a valid answer for this exercise. I need more information. And it transpired that he'd been having a really rough time. And I just thought, you know what? Even if he stays at home in his bedroom for the next 2 years, his mental health isn't being damaged, which could potentially cause irreparable damage. And actually, our learning is very autonomous. He's done boxing. He's done poetry through rapping. We've gone out on day trips. We'd have done more outside, but of course lockdown prevented a lot of those things. I even took him wild swimming and he embraced
that.
Yeah.
It's just these life experiences.
I mean, I went away this week, it wasn't planned, and he's looked after 2 guinea pigs, the cat, himself, and I've come back and the house is pretty tidy, and I'm just like, I've got a 15-year-old. How has this happened? And that's, he washes amazing every day without prompting. You know, that's like amazing for teenage boys.
Yeah, definitely. But I suppose, so between you, I mean, he's very fortunate because, as you say, you're a qualified coach now, and you work with psychologists, and you help other families, especially women and girls, to navigate the world when you are autistic. But, you know, you've obviously found this way of dealing with the outside world. But do you think, you know, not everyone is fortunate enough to have somebody who understands that? And where do you start with your clients when they come to you, either with a child that they believe may be autistic, or they themselves? I mean, I suppose, what sort of triggers somebody to come to you?
I think people just get into a state of being stuck, and we've all been stuck at one point in our lives. that you either manage to unstick yourself and move forward, and sometimes you just need help. And that's where I come in. So it's for people who are just feeling, I don't know where to turn right now. And coaching is such a transformative and powerful experience when you're ready for it. If you're not ready for it, it's not really going to be of use. I always start with things like the internal dialogue, because when you're constantly looking around thinking, why is Jane finding that so easy? It is easy. So why is it such a struggle for me? This is when the masking comes in, because you don't want to say that the thing is hard for you, because this other person, Jane, finds it really easy. That then kind of puts this negative narrative in your head. Why can't I do this? I'm stupid. I'm ridiculous. Why do other people find it so easy? What's wrong with me? Yada, 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 yada. And that's why I always say, don't believe a thought you think, because it's all lies.
So the work you do, I know you work, as I say, you work with a psychologist who helps with a clinical diagnosis, but you also have people who come to you who've already been diagnosed. And how do you, what sort of elements of life do you help with?
I help with the things that the autistic experience can cause challenges around. So things like executive functioning. And to put that into context, when you walk past the sink with the plates there, you go, oh God, that needs doing. Right, I'll do that now. Whereas somebody who's autistic will go, oh, look, the washing up needs doing, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, as they walk past. And it just doesn't register that actually that person can do something. So from a child perspective, they then get called lazy because they're not pulling their weight around the house. Why aren't you tired in your bedroom? Because it didn't occur to me that I could. Why didn't you put your washing away that I folded neatly and taken my time over, like, making sure it's ironed and washed and clean for you? Because I didn't know that it was a thing. So I help with things like that. So, I mean, personally, I've lost 6 hours straight looking out the window for squirrels in my back garden. So I can get caught up in executive dysfunction very easily. I help with taking the masks off, the limiting beliefs that we accumulate, break those stories that we're telling ourselves.
Can I talk a bit about work? So we got to talk, I got in touch with you and we had our first conversation because I'm on this journey of learning what it's like to be a mother when you don't just see the world the way I do. And so, you know, the way I see it is it's hard enough to get back to work and find a fulfilling career when you've got children, full stop. But what you showed me is that it's not, so there's all of that challenge, but then you layer on trying to get into work in a world that just doesn't understand you or doesn't see, as you've talked about, all of these things. I mean, trying to get on the tube or trying to go into an office or trying to follow online training or whatever that might be. I just wonder, does that come up with some of your clients about, you know, careers and career paths, or is that just too much?
No, absolutely. There's plenty of autistic people who are in paid employment.
Yes,
and I know that
course.
You look at the statistics and it says only 16% of autistic people are in full-time paid employment. But what it doesn't take into consideration are the how many people there are out there who are working who aren't diagnosed. How does that then increase those figures? Because they're skewed at the moment. But saying that, it's very, very challenging because I mean, I know so many autistic people who have a shelf life of jobs.
Really? What do you mean by that?
A year to 18 months.
Oh, I see.
And then we either get really bored, so we move on to something else within the business, so we end up staying. So people have been in a job for 10, 15 years. When you actually take the time to break it down, they haven't been in the same role for 10 to 15 years. They've done many different things around the business. And that's kept their mind sort of engaged, because we just get bored and you lose focus, which then makes you feel depressed. Then you think, oh God, I'm depressed. What's wrong with me? I'm depressed. I must go to the doctors. Then you get prescribed medication. It doesn't work because you're not actually depressed. You're just bored. Like the child in school who's really intelligent and plays up because they're bored. So we need that sort of things like processes. And then it's also hard when you're asked to do extra things. So self-employment for me has been amazing because I can hit the brakes when if I need to. And it's just like, right, okay, today is not going to happen. It's a non-day. Right, let's go with that then. What can I clear? I clear it off. Can you drop a day in the week? Yes, I can. Right, let's make that happen. And that's something that I also teach my clients to do. It's not selfish to take time for self-care.
Yeah. And what would you say to employers? You mentioned yourself, you worked at a bank, which, having worked there myself, you know, it's so much about following a process. And I guess from what little I know, sometimes that works well for autistic people. But as you say, if it's a day when you just can't, and it's not lazy, it's not anything other than you cannot, what would your message be for employers? Because we have to see more autistic people in work. We have to see people to understand them, because autistic people are also our clients, our customers.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think a lot of people discredit autistic people for work because they don't really understand the value that we can bring. But if you are hiring people who are all exactly the same, how can you ever expect to have a different perspective within your organisation? So when you are hiring autistic people, the adjustments to the workplace don't need to even be that much. And it's just an open conversation to work out how you can best work together. We are notorious for finding faster ways of doing things. So, yeah, if your process can be sped up and save you money as an organisation, is that not better?
Yeah, exactly.
We think outside the box. And by bringing outside of the box thinkers in, there is just so much. It's one of the reasons why I work mostly with autistic people, with the exception of my proofreader for my book, because she's neurotypical. She tells me things like, you're writing this as if everybody who is reading is autistic, and that's not necessarily going to be the case. So can I make this suggestion for a change? I'm like, yes, you can. That's amazing. And other times she's learnt from me too. It's a really amazing relationship. And it just goes to show how balanced it can be if you get the communication right and you have equal levels of respect.
Absolutely. And so grateful to you, because I've learnt so much from you, and only in a few hours of talking to you, I just think you're so brave. And I do think the world needs to start embracing autistic people more, because you've got there's so much we can learn. So thank you ever so much. I think you're amazing.
Oh, thanks, Jane.
Sorry, I did wonder if I would make it to the end of the interview without bursting into tears. I just think she's so brave. And indeed, anyone with autism who has to go out day after day and into a world that very often is just frustrating, loud, and incomprehensible to them. I just honestly don't know that I could do it. Nikki is one of our new partner coaches, and you can get in touch with her via our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com. I should point out that Nikki is not clinically trained, but she does work with a team that is on diagnoses. And what Nikki does is support autistic people in dealing with the world. She has a range of coaching options, and you can find her details in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode and you don't yet follow along or haven't left a review, please do so. It really helps us to reach a wider audience and have more impact. Don't forget, you can get access to heaps of free coaching, tools, and expertise on our website as well. Until next time.